Good to be with you this morning. We're going to be studying through a couple examples in the Old Testament on the idea of being blessed. And I think it's an idea that sometimes we kind of go over too quickly. And the idea of being blessed and being blessed by God, being blessed even by each other, it's an important concept that you run through the whole Scriptures, the idea that we are blessed. Now, you come upon the word being blessed or blessed, and sometimes we think, well, that just simply means being happy, but there's a lot more meaning than that. It's more the idea of being well-being because of your relationship with other people and relationship even with God Himself. The idea of the well-being and the joy that comes from that well-being, of being right with God and being in His favor. And what we sometimes think of his grace is the idea of being blessed by God. You think about the things that make our lives blessed. Sometimes it's the very smallest things. And sometimes it's even the small things that keep us from being blessed. One writer said it like this. It says, it's not our circumstances that sometimes get us down, but sometimes it's our fears. The worst sorrows in life are not the losses and misfortunes, but it's fears, the fears that we have. In James, he says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, because these will produce your faith. And sometimes we don't look at those things that way. And so a lot of it's not so much the circumstances we find ourselves in, but how we react to those. And to know that we are special people and to be blessed. I came upon this week, actually a couple weeks back now, that I saw a study that had been done out of Oxford, England, by a number of a team of scientists, working what they call the Drake Equation. And this came about, I don't know if you've heard of the Fermi Paradox. But Fermi was a great physicist of the last century. In fact, he's usually accredited of being the one that brought us into the nuclear age. He actually started the first nuclear power plant. And the Fermi paradox, what Fermi came up with, was he said, if this universe is so large, in fact, now, here's how we estimate. They estimate that the universe is 92 billion light years in diameter. Now, that's a phenomenal number. You can't get your arms around anything like that. NASA estimates that there are trillion stars. Now, that's one with, I think, 15 zeros. So it's, you know, a huge number. And over 13 billion years old. That this universe, and if it's been here that long, that old, how come we don't see any other life but ourselves? Are we the only life in the universe? And so that's what these Oxford scientists will study. They solve what they call the Drake Equation. And that's an equation that's supposed to go through all the different things that need to be there to have intelligent life. And there's a lot of variables there, and so they use their supercomputers to do what they call an iterative solution to that. And when they did that, this is what they came up with. This was just done about a month or so ago. It says, our main result is to show that the proper treatment of scientific uncertainties dissolves the Fermi paradox by showing that it is not at all unlikely for us to be alone in the universe. What they're saying is the most likely outcome is that there is no other intelligent life in the universe but us. Now, he said, we can't prove that. I mean, there could be other life. The Bible doesn't say one way or the other, of course, on that. But the thing that you can see when you think about it is the tremendous complexity of the universe and all the laws of nature that go together so that there can be life. And yet, with all of that, it's so unlikely that this, our, here on Earth, is the only intelligent life in the universe. And it leads you to believe there has to be an intelligence behind us being here. That was a conclusion that Einstein and many of the other great scientists of the last century came up with. And if you take a look at what Paul says in Romans, he says, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, His eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. when you see this tremendous universe of ours, the size and the magnitude and all the laws of nature, how they all are so that we can be here, it makes sense that there's an intelligence behind it. But it even goes further. If you go through the chapter 1, God lays down, in the beginning, He created the heavens and the earth. Then He created all the earth itself and molded the earth and made the oceans where they are and the mountains where they are. Then He puts all the plants and animals on the earth. He makes this great home for mankind. And what really, if you look at what these scientists are saying, it's not unreasonable to believe that God did exactly that. He created this whole universe so that we could be here on this earth. That He created this earth as our home. And all of this universe is created for us. And then it goes down, if you look at the end of chapter 1, and this is what I'd like for us to take a look at today. Look at what it says. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image and in our likeness." Now you think about that just a minute. Here we have this Creator God that created this whole universe, put all the laws of nature in the way that they needed to be, created this whole thing, so to speak. And then He created us. At the very end, after He created the earth and all the plants and animals, then He creates mankind. But He creates us in His own image. You're created in the image and the likeness of the eternal God. Now, is that not a kind of a neat thought? To think, I mean, you're not just created as a neat person, but you're created like God Himself. In the same likeness, the same image of this eternal God, you've been created. And that, to me, is something that sometimes maybe we don't think about enough. What does that exactly mean, that we're created in the very image and the likeness of God? Well, we know that God is a spirit. We know that He has tremendous intelligence. So we too have that intelligence. We have His likeness in so many different ways. In the scriptures that God has given to us, it says God is love. That idea of love that is one of the characteristics of God must be one of our characteristics, is that we're created to love. God is light in that He's morally upright. We too have that characteristic. God is merciful. Then we need to be merciful too. That's another characteristic that we must have because it's like our God. It's, we were created in that image. We are created to be free beings. In other words, we're free agents. So we have that free will to either choose Him or not. He created us that way, in His own image and His likeness. There's a lot you can think about, being in the very image and the likeness of God. But I want you to notice the next thing that is said in Genesis chapter 1. After God creates human beings in His own likeness, in His own image, notice what He does. And He blessed them. We've been blessed by the Creator of the universe. Now think about that. That idea that we're created in His image, in His likeness, and then He blesses us. That makes us special. And I think that special, we sometimes don't think enough about. That we're created in the very image of God, and God blesses us. This morning we're going to talk about the importance of blessings. And we're going to take a look at a couple twins that are very interesting guys in the Old Testament. They were the grandsons of Abraham. Now, I don't know if you've been around twins. When I grew up in high school, there were two sets of twins. There were two girls that were identical twins that I couldn't even tell them apart. But there were two guys that I used to hang out with, or one of them, Larry and Gary Spivey. And Larry was about 3 inches taller than Gary, so it was easy to tell them apart. They were totally different. And though they looked a lot alike, you could tell they were brothers, but they didn't act alike at all. Well, the grandsons of Abraham were sort of that way. Esau and Jacob were twins, but they were totally different. They weren't alike at all. If you go through, there's one interesting story. We know that Esau was a good hunter. He liked to go out and hunt. And he came back one day, and he was very hungry, been out all day. And Jacob had a nice pot of stew there, and Esau said, give me something to eat. And Jacob said, well, give me your birthright. Now, that birthright is something we don't think a lot about, but it was the very promises that God had made to Abraham and to Isaac and was carried on to the oldest son. But Esau, it says, despised or didn't put any importance to his birthright. I know Jim's going to talk more about that even next week as we in our Sunday school class. But he sells his birthright for a bow of pottage. Now, that's only one verse. But if you look over a little bit later, you get a whole chapter on the blessing and how Jacob steals Esau's blessing. And this is a very interesting story. Look at this is in chapter 27. And look at what's said at the beginning of 27. When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, my son? And he answered, here am I. Behold, I'm old. I don't know the day of my death. Now then take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out into the field and hunt game for me and prepare me some delicious food, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, and my soul may be blessed, and I may bless you before I die. Now, at this time, we believe Isaac is probably about 140 years old. It's a little hard to tell exactly, but it's roughly that. But he also is not about to die. He's going to live about 40 more years after this. So even though he thinks he's old and about to die, he doesn't. He dies at 180. So he's got a long time yet. So he calls Esau in to bless him. Well, Rebecca, Isaac's wife, hears this. Now, one of the things in the scriptures, it shows you the difference in showing favoritism. Rebecca's favorite was Jacob. Esau was his father's, Isaac's favorite. And the problem with playing favorites goes through the Old Testament. Jacob's going to make the same mistake later on with his sons. And the problems will be caused by showing favoritism to some sons over the other. Rebecca calls Jacob in. He says, Jacob, go in and tell your dad that you're Esau so he can bless you. And Jacob says, Mom, Dad, he may be getting old, he's almost blind, but he's going, no, I'm not Esau. You know, I'm not going to get away with this. And Rebecca said, no, look, I got it all worked out. You can go in there and do that. And he said, Mom, if I go in there and tell him I'm Esau, and he knows I'm not, he's going to curse me. And Rebecca says, well, don't worry, I'll take the cursing. You go in there and do the blessing. He says, I got this whole thing. Go get me two goats out of the goat pen, and I'll prepare them just like your dad likes them, and you can take them in there, and he'll think you're Esau. He said, Mom, it's not going to work, because as soon as I go in there, he's going to touch me, and I don't have any skin, I'm smooth skin, and Esau's real hairy, and he's going to know that I'm not Esau. And so Rebecca says, well, I got that worked out too. We'll put some animal skins on you, and we put animal skins around your neck, and you go in there, and I just not going to know any better. And so Jacob goes along with this. In fact, if you go through the whole chapter 27, when Rebecca tells Jacob, go in there and steal Esau's blessing, Jacob never says, you know, this is the wrong thing to do. To lie to dad is not a good thing. Jacob never says that. Jacob's just simply scared of getting caught. And he's not scared about whether or not it's right or wrong. It's just, will I get caught doing this? But Rebecca prepares the food for him. And so Jacob takes it in. And as soon as he does, Isaac says, you know, you don't sound like Esau. And evidently, his hearing is still good. He may be almost blind. But he says, oh, no, Dad, I'm really Esau. So Isaac said, well, come close to me and let me touch you. So he does. He touches him and he puts his arm around his neck. Yeah, you feel like Esau, but you still sound like Jacob. And so it may be kind of strange. The thing that throws him over so that Isaac thinks Jacob is really Esau is his smell. Now, how would you like to be known by your smell? But notice what's actually said when he goes in. And he gets the blessing. So he went in and kissed him, and Isaac caught the smell of his clothes. Now Rebekah had already given Jacob Esau's clothes to wear. And he blessed him and said, ah, the smell of my son. is like the smell of the field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you heaven's dew and earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mothers bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed. Now that's very similar to the great blessings that God had promised to Abraham and were promised to Isaac, and now would be the blessings for Jacob. Now if you go through this whole story, you see that Esau does nothing wrong at all. He goes out and finally gets some gain, prepares it and brings it into Isaac. And Isaac then says, well, who are you? He said, well, I'm Esau, and I've done what you told me to do, and here's the food. And so Isaac realized that Jacob has tricked him, so that he's already blessed Jacob with the blessings that he thought he was going to give to Esau. He does bless Esau, but not quite like he does Jacob. Now, the thing you can see if you go through the story is all the people, Isaac, Rebecca, Jacob, and Esau, they all put great importance on the blessings. The idea of blessing each other is very important. You see through the scriptures. But the other thing you see is Jacob himself. If you go through this story, Jacob has no redeeming qualities whatsoever. He goes in and lies and cheats his father and his brother. He never worries about what he's doing is right or wrong, just whether or not he's going to get caught. And Rebecca does it so that he doesn't get caught. But definitely Jacob is basically a lying, cheating kind of a guy. And as soon as it's all over, Esau says, you know, as soon as Dad does die, your history, Jacob, I'm going to take you out. And so Jacob thinks, well, maybe it's better for me to leave. And so he goes and lives with Laban, his uncle, for about 20 years. But then he comes back. And over that 20 years, Jacob changes. He's not the same person that was old. When he leaves to go to Laban, he makes a covenant or a vow to God that he will be faithful to God if God's faithful to him. And throughout Jacob's life, he has lots of ups and downs. He even has some pretty good run-ins with Laban himself. But he's always faithful to God. And you see that when he comes back. When he comes back, right the night before he's to meet with Esau, he's a little scared. He thinks Esau might still want to take him out, even though it's been 20 years. But he wrestles with God. And God changes Jacob's name. And he changes Jacob's name to Israel. Now you think that just a minute. Here's this guy that starts off lying and cheating to his brother. But now his name's been changed to Israel. He's going to become the father of the nation of Israel. So that his very name is going to be the name of God's people. Now that's a tremendous change for Jacob. And so one of the things you can see is the power of blessings, but also the power of God to change us. That just because we start off our life in one way doesn't mean we have to finish that way. That God can change us and make us into the kind of people that he wants us to be. We know that when we come to the Lord, we're filled with his Spirit. That Spirit can change you. And so you don't have to always end the way that you start your life. And definitely Jacob doesn't end his life like he starts it. He ends as Israel, the father of the 12 tribes of Israel, the nation of God. That's going to be this man. And so we see the importance of blessings and the importance of putting our faith in God and knowing that he can mold us and change us, that we don't always have to finish the way that we started. And we see that in the ups and downs in Jacob's life. And I'd like to end this morning with one more example of blessings. We have quite a few more in the scriptures. But this is in the first great sermon that we have recorded for us from Jesus himself. And if you go through the Sermon on the Mount, you think about how the Sermon on the Mount starts. It starts with what we usually call the Beatitudes, the blessings that Christ promises those who listen to him. And if you just go through these, and I'm going to preach, we could be here for a while and preach a sermon on this too. But we're not going to do that. I just want you to take a quick look at these blessings. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the hunger and thirst for what is right or righteousness. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who persecute for the righteous or the righteous sake. One of the things you see in all of these is what Christ is bringing us to is a different way than the way the world is. And it's really the idea, once you follow after Christ and His commands and His values, those are different from the values of this world. And notice the last one that we bring us to. Blessed are those when others revile and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. So they persecuted the prophets who were before you. When you're blessed by the Lord, you know He's going to watch over us. We may not always know when that's going to be, but He will be there for us. And that's the great blessings that we have that Christ introduces to us. You think about the story that we look at with Jacob and Esau. And you can see the importance of blessings. And there's a lot of ways that we bless each other that maybe we don't always think about. But that idea of being in favor of each other is important. It's important in all relationships. It's why marriages is so important. Just those words, I love you, are so important. It's so important for a father to his children to show that they have acceptance and the blessings within the family. These things go throughout scriptures, and you see the importance of how we treat each other. And the idea of being blessed by each other is a very important one. The other thing you can definitely see in Jacob and in his life is the way that God can move and change us as we live. When we're faithful to Him and we're blessed by Him, then we become like Him. And you see that with Jacob's life, because he sure didn't start off that way, but he ends as the father of the nation of Israel. Our rightness comes to our God through our faith in Christ. And one of the things you see in Jacob's life, Paul brings this out in the book of Romans, that God's people have always been acceptable to Him by faith. He uses the example of Abraham. Abraham was acceptable to God, not because he did all that, but because he believed God. And then he was faithful in the way that he lived. Paul uses the example of King David. David had great sins, but he had that faithful and that sorrowful heart to come back. And we also see that in Jacob's life. That Jacob starts off really as a lying sheep kind of a guy. But he ends as the very father of the nation of Israel. And that's an amazing thing to think about, that kind of transformation. And so you can see that the hand of God can change us. And so that we can be the kind of people that God would have us to be. I think this all goes into the idea of the importance of being blessed by God. We know that God created the heavens and the earth. And then before He formed the earth, just like a great home for us. And then He placed us on it in His own likeness. So this morning, remember that you have been created in the likeness and the image of the eternal, immortal God. That you're made by Him, and you've been blessed by Him. That means each one of us is very special and important to God. Remember that as you go through this week. Because sometimes this world can get us down a little bit. But know that you've been created in the very image of God. And that you can become, as we live in the Lord, and He fills us with His Spirit, He can make us more and more like Him, just as He did Jacob. This morning, think about your life. If you need to come for any reason, or just to know your relationship to the Lord, won't you come as together we stand and sing.